Awesome. Okay, this feels like super weird, honestly.
No, this is chill. It's actually more chill in a way than when it's recorded.
That's true.
This is more like...
There's no editing.
It's more like a Zoom. Just imagine we're in a Zoom meeting.
Zoom meeting, but we're looking at ourselves.
We're looking at ourselves, and people are just listening. This is kind of cool. It's cool. All right, so what are we talking about?
Okay, so yeah, first of all, we want, like, as much as you all want to be involved, we also want this to be like a guided discussion. So if you guys have
an open forum,
questions, and you can be as deep or as surface level as you want them to be.
Or if you're just arguing with what we're saying.
Like, yeah.
That's cool too.
So like, we're going to have like a topic that we're generally going to approach. But pardon me while I put my teeth in. Sorry. I got Invisalign recently.
Step off camera for that. Hold on.
I will. But just watch for a second.
That's wild.
Don't watch, I should say.
Yeah. Let's go. A few more people. Yeah. So here we are in the monastery. Just talking about judging people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's actually kind of what
that's what we're talking about. So
if we have a topic, you can certainly engage in this. Or if you at one point are like, hey, could you like hold the horses and like switch to something else? We will. But there's kind of our general theme would be like, we're getting some questions. So our general theme we're going to be talking about though, amidst questions, is like the legitimacy of judgment and what can be entailed in like judging other people or, what is valid judgment? Cause we're told like all the time, like, you know, don't judge.
Well, first of all, Christ himself says, judge not lest you be judged.
Right, yeah.
The measure with which you measure will be measured out to you.
Exactly.
So the degree of our own condemnation of other people is going to have its effect on how we are condemned. So it's like you want to steer clear of judging, but then the problem is we have to make judgments as part of life and like,
yeah,
it's part of being an intelligent, prudent person to make judgments about life. That involves making some assessment of other people's actions mm-hmm. when you interact with them. But it's sometimes it's hard to judge the line between it's hard to judge the line between judging somebody's actions versus judging their soul, which of course we're not supposed to judge their soul and the state of their soul. We don't know those things. That's between the person and God,
right?
But we can identify, okay, this or that action is wrong and so on, things like that, right?
Yeah, no, I agree.
So
100%. So
these are things that are currently also very relevant. For example, like with a few years ago, the whole debate about whether pro-abortion politicians should be allowed to receive communion. That was kind of, this is kind of the center of that debate, is saying, okay, we know supporting abortion is wrong, but because of that, can we judge that those people are in a bad state?
Yeah. And so actually, so what like canon law talks about for like keeping people from receiving communion is those who persist in like obstinate public mortal sin should not be admitted to communion.
Interesting.
And like public manifestations, basically there's been they have been corrected and there's been no remorse. They are open about their position. They're open about their lifestyle, whatever. So we'll get to that. Let's maybe answer these questions. So, okay. Lauren asks, what is Nate's favorite part about having a brother who is a monk?
Okay. Somewhat selfishly, some of it's just the opportunities that I've gotten through you. For example, like, thanks to Sam, I got to go on this sick trip to Alaska a while back. Before that, I got to go on a sick trip to Rome. This is sounding really selfish, but it's like, I mean, in a way, like it's cool. Like I kind of didn't expect that because I think I expected when he was becoming a monk that he was going to have himself fewer opportunities in life.
Yeah.
But in reality, he's had a lot and I've gotten to enjoy sharing with him in that. So, that's one big thing. It's just like, even doing this podcast, this is a cool opportunity.
Yeah, honestly.
If you were working a job right now and had a family, but now you probably wouldn't be able to do this.
No.
There's a lot of like brotherly activities we've gotten to do that I think are enabled by the fact that he's actually, at least in the monastery you are, there's more freedom than even honestly other ways of life that might be more as a layperson.
Which is wild to me. And that's such a reality.
Yeah.
Like I've realized like, well, I have more freedom.
Lucky man.
Than like I ever thought. And like, yeah, join the monastery, see the world.
Yeah.
Like that's not an actual motto, but it definitely happens. And then a lot of times it's join the monastery, see the world, and drag your brother with you.
Yeah, and I'm all for
it. He's here for it.
I'm here for it. Yeah. If you get married, if you got married, man, you go on a honeymoon, see the world for a few days, and then you'd be back, and then you'd be grinding that 9 to 5 indefinitely. But
I mean, we do work. Like
you do work. I know you work, but I'm saying like now you travel a good bit.
I know.
You've been to a lot of states, been to a lot of countries.
In like one calendar year, I went to Portugal, Italy, Spain. Alaska, like kind of got around.
What was the best of those four?
Alaska.
100%. Really?
Oh, yeah. No, Alaska,
America, awesome. Dude, beats out all the others.
It's like its own country, though. I mean,
oh, it's massive.
The last frontier really does.
If you cut Alaska in half, Texas would be the third largest state.
Yeah, isn't that? They love saying that kind of stuff. So.
Okay, so what does Kevin say? Do all the monks have their own computer and internet connection?
So I guess no, not all of them. So any who have like a position or a job or necessity for a laptop or computer. So I'm in seminary, all of our papers, you know, type them, you know, especially when COVID, when we were in class, then everything was online.
Sorry, I'm mewing.
Yes, you're good. Keep going. So we like laptop was super necessary. And a lot of monks here are professors in the college or in the seminary. As far as internet connection, so there's no like public Wi-Fi like all throughout the monastery. There's like one like Wi-Fi like zone in one of our lounges, and then there's two small hotspots on like the floors where the seminarians live. So, okay. But it's public, so
that's good.
You can't really, then if you're really really close to the hotspots, you can kind of get in there in your room, but it's not very reliable, and it's like a good, the best you can get is maybe like check an email or something.
Right.
Because you know,
that's good for community too, that people aren't just like able to just be scrolling indefinitely on their phone or whatever in their own rooms or something.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, it's kind of unmonastic too. Like the cell is where you're supposed to retreat away from the world. And if you like
God, right?
Can go into the cell and it's still like the world is into it, then it's kind of defeating the purpose of it. So, it's not across the board, but especially based on need, most monks probably have some form of either a phone or a laptop based on necessity. So, yeah, that's kind of what we got. Okay, cool. So Sarah, wonder who that is. It's our sister.
Our sister.
Hello. Hey, watching with our niece. Says, what's something you were looking forward to when you become a deacon before the priesthood? That's actually a really good question, because a lot of people like ask, what are you excited for the priesthood? Because that's like the big benchmark. But diaconate is along the way, and it's not like, oh, you know, like a stepping stone.
Half
like,
priest.
Gotta get there. You gotta grind through the diaconate, and then we can be a priest, right? No, like diaconate is super important, because as we had that episode with Deacon Michael.
The first martyr was a deacon.
Yeah. But Deacon Michael was saying, like, in the diaconate, one is ordained and conformed to the person of Christ the servant. Yeah. So the priest is conformed to Christ the high priest. But the deacon is conformed to Christ, the servant. So I think what I am most excited about being as a deacon, honestly, is probably preaching and baptisms. So it's deacons are ordinary ministers for baptisms. And I have a lot of friends who are expecting.
I thought you were going to say you have a lot of friends that are planning to get pregnant in time for you to be a deacon.
No. and a lot of them have said like...
it's wild.
No, some of them said like, well, we might not wait till May, which you know, is fine. But that they've all like all said like, we'd be definitely like second or third kid, like 100%,
locked
like you're gonna be baptizing. So yeah, that just has me super excited. Like being able to bring, you know, people into the church through baptism.
Exactly.
And yeah, I'm really excited. I teach RCIA in the college, and not this year because RCIA or Easter.
OCIA.
OCIA. Thank you. Yeah.
The update.
The order. You're right. But this year Easter falls before I'm ordained. But next year, I'll still be teaching OCIA for my last year, and I, as the deacon, might be able to baptize those who are coming to the church.
That you brought in, that's so cool.
Now the bishop is there, and if he's there, like he's the one who's supposed to do
it.
But it'd still be really cool to be able to be on the altar with those who enter the church. So, and I'm really, this is like a really niche thing, but I am super excited as a deacon to sing the Exultet at the Easter Vigil.
Oh, that'll be big.
Because I love that prayer.
Exultet,
that song is
gorgeous.
Awesome. And there's a version of it. I think his name is Patrick Lank. And you can find it on Spotify. But he has a version of the Exultet. And when I listen to it, I definitely cry like multiple times.
Yeah.
And to the point where it was like preparing me for the Easter Vigil like last year. And the line that hits me every time is... how's it go? Like, to ransom a slave, you gave away your son.
That's crazy.
And I just, oh,
yeah.
And the way it's sung, too, so good.
Oh,
so
gorgeous.
I'm super excited for that. So that's a great question.
Another question from Kevin.
Okay. The essentials are the same, but how would you say this daily Benedictine life has changed since Vatican II? So I was not alive before Vatican II, obviously.
But you've studied monastic history.
Yes, yeah, have studied. And there was monks here who were obviously part of the monastery before the Second Vatican Council. I think
part of the monastery?
Yeah.
Those guys are old. Wow.
Yeah, well, Father Justin's our oldest monk. And I think he's been professor for 73 years or something like
that's
that.
That's awesome,
so
dude.
He's like 90. That's a good, 94,
good
I
long
think.
Marriage.
Like he's a solid example of stability and perseverance. But yeah, so how has it changed? So as far as like monastery dynamics, there used to be like a clear difference between like ordained monks and non-ordained monks, to the point where the non-ordained monks didn't actually say the liturgy of the hours with the ordained. They had like their own choir chapel and they would say the rosary three times a day in English, because back then the office was only chanted in Latin, and these lay brothers, as they called them, unfortunately were kind of considered stupid.
Their correct title?
It is. Yeah. But like they like really like hyper fixated on the fact that they were lay. Okay. I'm really excited about that next question. But so yeah, there was a distinction, and it wasn't just a distinction of like office, like, okay, ordained, not ordained, just because like that exists, that distinction still exists. Right.
Yeah.
But it was like, we eat differently. We eat at separate parts of the refectory. It's almost like segregation.
It's not like there's more of a division between.
Well,
in general, my impression is maybe that was one of the faults that Vatican II sought to address.
Yes,
was there
it
was a sharp distinction between the clergy and the laity in general. Now, I think at this point, we've gone a little too far in trying to correct that, where now we act as if there is no distinction, which is obviously wrong. But yeah, some of that clericalism, I guess, affected
the monastery. Yeah, so that was very present. And then after the council, slowly the brothers started being incorporated into the normal life of the community. And then we adopted the vernacular English for our office. So that made it more accessible for them. And then kind of in that, they were not allowed to take solemn vows. Their vows are called perpetual vows, which I don't know canonically. I don't think there's actually any distinction in that, but they like called them something different because they weren't ordained. But now all monks, regardless of if you're pursuing ordination or not, still take solemn profession.
Do you have a sense if the ratio generally of priests to, or like ordained monks to lay monks, has changed a lot?
Oh, drastically. So before the height of St. Vincent, there was probably like 300 monks here. And probably like 250 of those were brothers and only 50 were priests.
Oh, so it was sort of an elite.
Yes. Yeah. Now it's like completely switched. And there's probably out of the 150 monks that there are here, probably 70%, 60 to 70% are ordained and only like 30 to 40 aren't.
Yeah.
So, okay. Nate, your godson wants to know what is cool
to
listen to Christmas music. Discuss. So, congratulations to our sister-in-law, Johanna. She just had
so happy.
Our nephew, yay,
baby.
Damien, was born yesterday morning. And Nate's going to be the goddad.
So hyped. Thanks,
so,
Joe.
The godfather. So, okay. When do you think
you
it's appropriate
to
listen to Christmas music?
On the occasion of my daughter's wedding. Okay. So when is it okay to listen to Christmas music? Well, that's a great question, Joe. Thanks. Well, certainly during the Christmas season. And I think, okay, personally, it's weird because it's one of those things where I might have some like ideal principles that I think are based in theory, but then I myself don't practice them. So like, I think it seems like it'd be holy that's mine. Okay, whatever. It'd be good to make Christmas as special and sacred as possible by kind of having all the joy of those songs at that time and saving it for them. But in reality, I really like listening to Christmas music in advance, especially because I just graduated from college. So in college, to get through finals around Christmas time,
yep, I agree.
Part of the motivation was looking forward to Christmas break and getting excited. So to power through finals, I would just listen to it. And then it would gradually creep earlier and earlier. I kind of listened pretty much from the beginning of December. But I think it also depends on the song, because there are some songs, like we were talking about this actually yesterday, the song "It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas," the lyrics of that are explicitly focused on the fact that Christmas is coming and it's about to show up. And actually, a lot of the more secular Christmas songs, the ones that aren't so focused on like the spiritual side of things, the more secular ones are often focused on kind of the whole winter season and Christmas being just around the corner. So I think it makes sense even lyrically to listen to those,
yeah,
you know, from the start
of Winter Wonderland.
Yeah, that's from the start of December. I mean, we've actually even had Winter Wonderland kind of weather where we live around Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think the Silent Night and Holy Night and What Child Is This, all those ones that are really emphasize the spiritual side of Christmas, that you should wait till maybe a couple days before Christmas. But honestly, the more secular ones that are kind of just, they're just peppy. They're just kind of getting your spirits joyful. I don't see what's wrong with listening to that for the whole month leading up to it.
I generally agree, especially like in college. Like Christmas music gets you through finals. At least it did for me.
Yeah.
And I think now it's generally like maybe between after like the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday to December 1st, probably somewhere in there, I start listening to Christmas music. But I would say the frequency of it is what I change. Mm. So in the beginning, it's like maybe like, yeah, whether it's song choice or just like the hours of exposure to Christmas music is like very minimal. Like,
oh, me too. That's what
it's
I
like
do. Yeah,
only a little bit at first. I think the big thing for me is, so the monastery on the third Sunday of Advent, so Gaudete Sunday, we have our Christmas trimming party. So we bring a live tree to our lounge. We decorate it.
That's
we
fun.
Sing Christmas carols. We have like this like Christmas cuisine that some of the monks have made, drinks, and just like kind of hang out. To me, that's like the like official nod from the community that like is now justified to listen to kind of any Christmas music. So at that point, which is usually right after finals, that's kind of that after finals is when it really picks up for me. Then it's when I'm driving, you know?
Yes.
And so
Bosco,
Brother Bosco would fundamentally disagree with that because he says November 1st is
legitimate.
And I have, ooh, this is great. This is at Inquire Within, because I don't know if I can like show it right now, but if you really want to hear this, you should reach out. I have a recording of Bosco like belting out the Mr. Grinch song in his room on like November 3rd.
So
I actually got a 2-year reminder of the recording on my phone from Google the other day.
That's awesome.
And it's so funny. Because he likes singing really low, so he's like, Mr. Grinch. It's so funny. He's so embarrassed, and he's probably, if he hears this,
he didn't know that anyone was filming.
Oh, no. He had no idea I was recording.
Because awesome.
His room was next to mine, and I could hear him through the wall.
Yeah.
So I went to his room, cracked up the door a little bit, put my phone in to record.
Midway through November, it can be weather-based, too. If you have a really snowy day,
it doesn't matter if
it's, like, before Thanksgiving by a couple days, go ahead and listen to some Christmas songs.
Our mom, I think, would disagree.
Definitely.
The Messiah was allowed because it's, like, very Advent-y. And usually, we would also decorate the tree around, like, the second or third Sunday of Advent. And usually after that...
No, we put the tree up with some lights on around 2 weeks into Advent. And then we decorate it like a week before Christmas.
Yeah. So usually at the decorating in our house was when things.
That's when you really would be chill.
If anyone can make the Grinch hearts grow, it's Bosco. That's so true, though.
So true. Bosco's amazing.
Okay. You want to read
deep question
Vince.
From. Okay. Vince. What's up, Vince? What are some things you learned? By the way, Vince, we were talking to some people today about pizza cake. So
yeah,
we're sharing your philosophy. What are some things you've learned about yourself through podcasting now that you've been at it for a while? Do you have anything?
Learned. I don't want to like, you know, sound arrogant, but like
he's learned that he's pretty good at it. Like
I didn't think we were gonna be bad.
Yeah.
But I think one thing that I've been like really impressed about for both of us, and I've learned about myself, is the ability to carry on like an intellectual conversation for an extended period of time without like a bunch of formal preparation.
Yeah.
Because when we first started podcasting,
we would have
an outline on the computer with like points and like make sure to guide us. But
yeah,
we don't do anything like that anymore. It's basically like, here, Nate, here's a topic, or he'll be like, hey, Francisco, Sam,
just
whatever, like
it.
Let's go with this.
Yep.
And we just do it. Get excited. We had an episode with Father Boniface we recorded yesterday that should be coming out pretty soon.
Father Boniface Hicks, he's goated.
Dude, what
he's awesome.
A legend.
If you haven't heard of him, he's written a lot of books. He's a spiritual director for half the East Coast, Sam says.
Yeah.
He's just a very renowned speaker and author, and he's awesome.
But all we went in was when he said, okay, like, what do you want to discuss? He said, vulnerability in prayer. That was it. And he's like, great, I can talk about that. And he also can roll with shooting from the hip. He's coming from the heart.
He's brilliant, but he's spent years doing this sort of thing. So
but like also engage in that just as well. So I think I learned that While I sometimes like shy back, I'm more of an introvert, like in open conversations in public with sharing my opinion. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes that I think has caused me to think that like maybe I don't think things well, or I don't think through things well,
yeah.
or that I'm not very articulate, or that maybe I'm even boring. Mm-hmm. But this has proved to me that like I'm not, because one, people actually enjoy listening.
You'll enjoy it, yeah.
And when I listen back, which is a weird experience when you listen to your own content back, it's like I actually can acknowledge I actually make good points. Yeah. And like Nate makes really good points too. So I think that's what I've learned.
Yeah. Well, since you were vulnerable for a second there, I'll be vulnerable. One thing I've learned about myself is that I do say the word like a good bit.
Yeah.
So listening to recordings, I will think, wow, I use the word like, or I use filler words such as, you know, a good bit. So that's one critique that I've tried to work on. But another thing I've learned about us is that, or this is something I've learned about us. This is something I've just learned in general through doing this podcast, is that people are so kind and willing to listen when you just put a little work in.
Yeah.
Like at this point, I just used the word like there in the wrong context. We've put in work for a while now. You've done a lot of work and it's not all perfect, but people are just eager and excited whenever we're making mm-hmm. a new episode and they ask about it. There's so many times nowadays friends ask about, oh, are there new episodes coming out? And it's kind of mind blowing that they care, because I just think we're just doing something for fun. And that's how it started. We just wanted to have some conversations for
yeah,
fun.
Exactly.
People actually care. So that's been really, really awesome. All right, you got a question from Nick.
Okay, all right.
Looks like a deep one.
Yeah, okay. So could you talk about monastic / religious life and sexuality? Like for those who might have same-sex or bisexual attraction, or those who might have addictions to sex, pornography, etc. Okay, so the kind of wild that you asked that question now, because...
I got to get up.
Just for a second. We actually just had someone come in to speak to the seminary about... like walking through and still dealing with some addictions, particularly sexual addictions, as seminarians or like, you know, potentially, you know, priests still struggle with these things. So I think what he was saying is that there is stipulations that are set that kind of show that if a man doesn't like demonstrate an ability to stay sober for a full year before entrance into a community, he probably shouldn't be accepted. And if he is, it's with like severe provisions. But unfortunately, a lot of that is not really done well, so that however his evaluation is psychologically, he could lie on it or whatever, or the person who reads it is just kind of like pro forma, so that it's just not taken care of well. So that's speaking from the addiction point of view. And I would say for those, you know, who struggle with those things, that it's not like the end of the world or the deciding factor that like, oh, if you struggle with those things, whether it's pornography or some kind of sexual addiction, that completely illegitimizes any vocation you feel like God might be calling you to, or that at some point you've gone too far and you're now unworthy of becoming a monk or a priest because of the things that you struggled with. Because if that was the case, 99% of the saints would not have entered into like the religious life orders that they did, right? St. Augustine, all these saints, even if you don't know their story as well as Augustine, all dealt with some kind of sin that isn't, you know, compatible with their vocation, but God worked through it. So I would say, if you know it's a problem now, don't expect that entering religious life will fix the problem. A lot of people think that this changing of life or having like a deeper relationship with God will solve your solution, and it's not going to. In some ways, it may make it harder, because now you enter religious life, enter the priesthood, and you're in a more confined, like a closed group of people, so that opening up about your struggles is way harder because you're held to a higher standard. You have less people that you can trust, less people who should know. So work on those things now. Therapy, spiritual direction, going to, you know, whatever, like anonymous meetings, you know, those things that are just naturally suited toward helping you. But that I do believe at sometimes that if we're continually struggling with these things, but we're striving for perfection, so we're striving to free ourselves, that sometimes though vocation is the place where God will grant us the full freedom from those things. So, and then as far as like the sexual attractions, so just to quote exactly what the Catechism says and what Pope Benedict says in speaking about admittance of ones who have potentially same-sex or bisexual attraction, those who are known to have deep-seated same-sex attraction, or who are supportive of the gay culture, or clearly desire to be in a gay romantic relationship, are not to be admitted to community or to the priesthood. Because
what does deep-seated mean though?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the whole problem. Usually deep-seated is evidence by like aggressive acting out. And I would even like shy away from saying like, have you ever acted out once? Because like the stuff that like psychology and obviously one's exposure to pornography can do to you can make you potentially interested in things you actually have zero real attraction towards. Mm-hmm. But it becomes a dependency on it. Deep-seated also is like this, like a tree is known by its fruit, right? So I think one who has deep-seated homosexual attractions, the fruit of which is that they like demand acceptance of their sexuality by other people. They demand like the culture of it, right? They're looking and believe this. I think this is another sign. They believe that only one from their like their gender, their sex could fully fulfill them.
Yeah.
Because that just like stands as like a disorder because like we're ultimately going to live life of celibacy, mm-hmm. but especially in the religious life, in the context of other men. And if you were like kind of coming down to believe that it's only based on, you know, another man or in a woman's case, another woman, that you can find total fulfillment. One, I would say if someone believes that even about the other sex, then they might not be called to vocation, right? If they believe I need this other person for total fulfillment, then maybe we need to consider a vocation. It takes on an extra level of importance and degree of discernment though, because now this is like, it's the catechism says a disordered desire. It's not in conform with what is natural to us. Mm-hmm. Not to say that you are by yourself an unnatural person, but you have things about us that are unnatural. So I know that doesn't answer the question like perfectly, but I do get a lot of questions. I got a lot more questions about this in the comments before. So it's a good thing to bring up. I rest on the decision of the abbot and the vocation director here, if they know someone has some of those issues, to walk with them, to get evaluated psychologically, to really determine like the level of it. One example, Father Francis is our vocation director. And he said he had a guy reach out. And as he was talking about stuff, he said he got like this little inkling in something the guy said that the guy might have same-sex attraction, which to Francis isn't like an immediate, like absolutely hang up no, but he has to inquire more. He has to be way more diligent about it. And the guy admitted to having a boyfriend. And the Father Francis said, that's a no. Like you have accepted that like that you want to live this lifestyle.
Yeah.
So that becomes an automatic no at that point. Okay. Let's see. Okay, Kevin. So it's interesting. I think he's talking about the changes from the council.
Yeah.
Would you say there's less of an emphasis on bodily mortification, flagellation and such now too? Well, yeah, we are not supposed to whip ourselves like that. Mortification. No, we're still, I mean, that's part of conversatio daily, taking on our vow of living what God calls us to. And that requires us to deprive ourselves of the things that we prefer to do. But bodily mortification, as far as like whipping, hair shirts or whatever, I would say generally that's a no.
You mean in your community?
Yeah. But like
people still choose to do
that. Yeah, things. People still choose to do, but like generally we're cautioned against it. And any preferences towards things like that, we have to run by our spiritual director because they're the ones who would actually decide whether or not it's a good thing for us. Mm-hmm. Okay. Nate, do you want to? Lauren asks,
favorite Christmas song. Good question. Probably I think it's just called The Christmas Song. It's the chestnuts roasting on an open fire song, specifically the version by Nat King Cole. That's like, I mean, that's one of the most classic
that's good
Christmas songs ever.
My favorite is In the Bleak Midwinter, particularly the version by Jars of Clay.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. That's kind of melancholy though.
That's why I love it.
Hey Diego, what's up? It's
hey, your first time welcome. Here. Is this good to have
is
you?
Is this your first time seeing this channel at all?
If so, welcome.
Yeah.
Okay. Lauren's just popping off with these questions. These are great. So favorite post marathon / race snack or treat.
Yeah, he just ran a marathon if anyone didn't know.
Yeah, I ran a marathon. Actually with Lauren, she was at the half, so that's super cool.
Yeah.
So my favorite snack. Let's see. Probably peanut butter filled pretzels. Like it's such a good combo, like protein, salt. I got to have some water with them because it makes you thirsty, but peanut butter filled pretzels probably. Do you have a favorite like post-exercise or post-race?
I don't know. Actually, have you ever had oh gosh, what are they called? They sound really unappealing, but I think they're called fruit leathers. Have you ever had those?
Oh yeah, yeah.
They're almost like fruit roll-ups in the sense they're like these little strips.
They're like nasty, dude.
No, dude. Okay, I used to think that too till last summer when I was working at a camp as a counselor. We had them all the time. They're addicting, dude. They're so good, but they're actually pretty healthy. They don't have a lot of they don't have added sugars or a bunch of unnatural things, but they do have some like natural fruit sugars, and they're really sweet. In that way, and tasty, and they have I think they have some good electrolytes, so it's really good for energy levels. That doesn't feel like you're eating something totally terrible.
What about Smarties? Smarties are great. I did appreciate the Smarties you gave me at the marathon. Okay. Like, not my number one.
This is very personal.
They're
now.
Pretty great. Okay.
Lauren earlier asked, what has been something you enjoyed post college, and what is something that you miss? I miss just living with all my closest friends. Like, literally at college, you can just be any time of day, any ordinary night. It only takes a few minutes to get people together and just do something fun. Just do something spontaneous. Go have a little party. Go off campus and have a late night Taco Bell run. Now I still have friends around me, but we're all kind of doing our own things. Friends are living in different apartments, and they're busy with work. Even when they're not working, like when they clocked out, they have other stuff they're trying to take care of. It's kind of on the practical side of things. And same with me. Like, you know, I work in the day, and then at least till recently, I was spending a lot of my afternoons studying for the LSAT, which I just took to get into law school. And so like, we're all kind of busy, and we're not living in the same household. So it's just harder to make stuff happen. Takes a little more effort though. That's all. And then what's something that I have enjoyed post-college is, on the flip side, even though I'm around fewer friends, I'm now around my family more. So getting to do stuff with you, getting to do stuff with Sarah and Tom and Joe, and obviously our parents too. We love our parents.
And the nieces and nephews.
And the nieces and nephews. Yeah. I can't forget them. So that's been really cool. Let's see, brother. And Nick says, if the abbot told you to shave your beard,
go ahead.
Would you have to? Regardless, I think you should consider shaving it, and Nate should consider growing one. Interesting.
Well, you can tell that to his face.
What?
You know, you don't thrive in the beard growing realm.
What do you mean? It's just very blonde. What?
Oh, okay. Well,
your eyes are so judgmental right now. What are you looking at?
You have said that you don't grow a good beard. Like,
no, I've said I grow a very blonde beard, so for a while it doesn't show up.
Okay, maybe I feel like I've heard you say you don't grow a beard well.
No, there's a couple of patches where it, like, wouldn't come through very much.
Okay.
But I can. It's just that it's because of how light the hair is, it's almost like white.
Yeah.
It's like so blonde that it would take a while, and it would look, I think, scruffy in between. So that's why I've had phases where I started almost doing it, and then I'm like, this is going to take a while for it to really show up in a good way and be full. So
I had to go through the ugly phase.
Yeah, you did too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yours are naturally darker.
I think
you
look good without a beard though.
Without a beard?
Yeah.
Thank you.
As far as if the abbot said I'd have to, and if he told me, like, under obedience, Brother Francisco, you have to shave your beard, then yeah, I would. But if he's just like, I really want your beard shaved, but he doesn't like put me under obedience, so I'd be like, thanks for the preference.
They can specify when they're telling you something under obedience.
100%. Yeah. So there actually was a time where monks were not allowed to have beards here,
like the Yankees.
Yeah. But now, you know, it's kind of open, and I have considered shaving. Actually, I had just a mustache for a while last year, but then people said they didn't like it, and I was kind of for a while like, oh, I don't care, but then someone described it a little bit more aggressively, and I realized I couldn't just go with the mustache anymore. So as far as the beard,
you should be driving around in the white van.
That's exactly what they said.
Yeah.
I thought about shaving, but I also am like kind of, I don't know. I just don't really look, I don't like a baby face. I don't know if I have a baby face without a beard anymore, but I've trimmed it really, really low. And I definitely do, agreed.
Yeah. So true.
I just don't know if I like the look. So, you know, but again, you know, hey, if we could get some donations to shave the beard, you know, no shave November, but we're reversed, like clean shave December, something like that. Like, I'll go clean shaving if we can raise some money for the podcast.
$50 you'll go.
And Nate will shave his head.
That's not happening. Okay, so, but he'll shave his beard because he can grow that back pretty quick. All right.
I could dye it black first and then take some pictures and then shave it.
That'd be insane. Nate, I'd like to see you grow your hair a little longer.
I did grow it out for a little bit, but
really,
this is kind of the way I like it. But
our sister asks if it's acceptable to still wear socks outside of the sweats with Birkenstocks. So, Sarah, when you say still, do you mean like in the sense that that was a past trend, and you're asking if it still is in.
I think, well, isn't it the thing that like you can wear socks with Birkenstocks if you're wearing sweatpants, but if you're not wearing sweatpants, is that still okay? I don't know. Maybe that's.
Well, I think she has socks outside.
Oh, outside, like pull it outside
like, of the sweats. Yeah, hold on. Maybe Sarah can clarify what she means. Yeah, you mean outside of the sweats, right? So it's like pulled over the bottom part of your pants. I think that's still acceptable. It's like a very athleisure, comfy look. I guess in my opinion that I don't think that should ever go to that style. It's just a great look. But
I always judge guys in college who did that.
Put their socks outside. Yeah, of it
just looks so dumb.
Yeah. I think if you're going to do that though, it's gotta be like a whole casual look, and Birks definitely go well with that. If you were to, I think, pull your socks outside of your pants and then, or like you pull your socks over the bottom of your sweats and then you just wore sneakers or something, that would look
weird. That would look weird. Bad homeschooler.
Yeah, exactly. So I think if you're going to do it at all, you got to wear Birks. And I don't see why that's gone out of style at this point. I think it's still in style. I don't know how long that'll last. Thomas says, the fastest Whitaker brother wants to know which nation has the most badass saints.
Well, first of all, are you the fastest?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think you are. Like, I do think you are. In a sprint, I need to know. I actually need to know that. In a distance that's like more than a mile or two, I think you would beat both of us. I don't know. Maybe not you. I think he would beat me because I just know you're like general mile.
Definitely would beat me because he would cook me because he's practiced a lot more lately. But in a sprint, I think if he and I had been training equally for an equal amount of time and intensity, I don't know. I feel like for a longer
distance, you get the longer legs.
For a long distance, it's hard to say. But anyway, to his question, which nation has the most badass saints? I mean, Italy just has so many saints in general.
Yeah, that's true.
Such a high concentration of saints that I feel like being a saint, you have to be pretty BA just to be a saint. So the fact that they have the most saints, probably the highest concentration, seems to point to the fact that they might have that. They got, I mean, to some extent, Benedict
Benedict was Italian. Yeah.
Yeah. And Francis of Assisi.
So many Benedictine saints.
Most Pope saints.
Yep. Pier Giorgio Frassati, Gian Bosco, St. Gemma Galgani, right?
Carlo Acutis, Gemma Galgani, after whom our niece is named.
St. Gianna Mola, right? She's from
Italy. Marie Gray, right? Yeah. I mean, there's countries that are stacked. England stacked, Germany stacked. Dude, back before Germany went bad, Germany had such cool saints.
Yeah.
France used to have.
Well, I was going to say France, because like the concept, we're, you know, we're not concept. The truth that St. Paul says, where sin abounds, grace abounds more. Yeah. Sin is rampant in France, as you can see in the Revolution and all those things. And that means, and France has got some of the craziest, awesome saints, dude. But actually also Turkey, especially like the early church fathers, mm-hmm. and like the early doctors of the church, a lot of them came from the East.
Yeah.
And like Turkey, Alexandria, like Greece area,
yeah.
a lot of awesome saints. But I would probably say
Africa,
France.
Africa too.
Africa. Northern Africa.
Well, that's just a continent.
It's so hard.
But
I would probably say France. I think Italy. Like St. Joan of Arc, St. Teresa of Lisieux.
Yeah.
St. Louis de Montfort. Francis de Sales, he was from...
England has some really hardcore saints too.
France, or was he from
Francis de Sales was Switzerland. Well, okay. He was a bishop in Switzerland, I think, but I think that's where he's from. Okay, Nick says studio tour. We're always somewhere different. Yeah. Right now, we're currently in like
call it the traveling podcast. Actually, sometimes,
have some lights and this microphone and the camera. And we just kind of go
wherever we go.
Yes.
Okay, favorite podcast episode you guys have done so far? Okay, wow, that is actually really hard.
One we just did yesterday for me.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
We recorded one yesterday with Father Boniface, and it was just so cool to be with him.
Shout out to Italy, St. Anthony of Padua. There's a story behind that, but she's just proving Italy.
Bet.
But so we had like, I think we're almost at 90 episodes at this point. I think my favorite episode was the one we did over the phone. With Tom about failures, experiences of failure, which you actually won't find that on YouTube. So if there, YouTube really starts only like very sporadically, like around episode 40.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't even consistent. It was like on and off.
YouTube started roughly less than a year ago. And we've been doing this for about 2 years.
Yeah. So
actually been doing this.
There's a lot more episodes. And if you go to just Spotify or like Apple Podcast or Pandora, Pocket Cast, there's like tons of options. That I think that one was probably my favorite, because it was just like, I don't know, a lot of growth in brotherhood. Yeah. I think from that, and yeah, I really liked
that. That was great.
What is your guys' favorite episode?
Yeah, drop some faves.
Lauren says hers is the one on forgiveness. Oh, that was a really good one. I love the part where you were at the rocks and then you're like, bye guys. And like,
I was at like a party spot at my college, and then we were leaving the party and
Vince, like,
I was on the phone when we were recording it. Okay. Nick says, podcast you listen to, favorite Cali books and novels. Okay. Podcast I listen to, Pints with Aquinas.
Yep. Same.
With Matt Frad. If you haven't heard of it, you need to look it up. Pints with Aquinas. It's incredible.
I also listen to Lust is Boring with Jason Everett. It's a really good
Jason
one.
Jason Everett's so good. Theo Vaughn podcast is not, it's not always totally PG. Sometimes he's just wild and sometimes it's a little bit sus. But if you haven't heard of the comedian Theo Vaughn, he's pretty funny. He's like this southern dude with just a lot of wild takes and opinions.
I listen to Michael Knowles' podcast, especially when he interviews. He's doing a lot of stuff interviewing like psychics, former witches,
converts,
Satanists.
He interviewed an exorcist.
Yeah, like he has like really, really interesting interviews.
They're very faith focused. He's a very Catholic dude.
Yeah, yeah. I think something we both listen to is a Dr. John Deloney podcast. He does a lot of stuff about like marriage and like trauma counseling, I guess.
Just generally mental health in general. So he'll it's a call-in show. So people will call him with all kinds of issues. It could be marriage issues. It could be just personal issues or work issues. And he'll just give him little counseling for a while over the phone. And it's really good. Okay. So what favorite Catholic books and novels? Oh, I was just thinking about this since he said Catholic books and novels.
Yeah.
Because like we all have our favorite books. I know yours favorite is Tale of Two Cities, right?
Yeah.
And I got some of my own favorites. But I think of Catholic ones, I think.
Do you mean by like Catholic authors or that are specifically Catholic in like their content? Because
if he means Catholic in content, my favorite's Father Elijah, probably. By Michael, what's his name?
O'Brien.
Michael O'Brien. That's if you haven't ever heard of Father Elijah, it's actually a book series, but the first one can kind of stand alone and just you can read it on its own and be amazed. It's a story about a priest in the end times. It's very cool.
My favorite, like specifically Catholic content wise, is by Louis de Waal. He's an author who writes a lot of historical fiction, usually about saints. And it's so hard to decide which one because I love all of them, but I think it's one called Lay Siege to Heaven, which is about St. Catherine of Siena. Also, Italian saint, man. She's one of my favorite saints. She's awesome. And yeah, just the power of like intercession is really obvious through what she did. But he also has another one called The Spear, which is about St. Longinus,
amazing, dude.
Who's the That's soldier who pierced Christ's side at the crucifixion. That story
he
also
weaves
so freaking good, dude.
He weaves together so many different stories from the gospel in a really cool way.
Yeah. The woman caught in adultery
is like the centurion's girlfriend. And it's
really it's the centurion who is the one who she commits adultery with.
Right. It's and, like, so it's basically the books are historical fiction, but they make the lives of the saints more interesting than you've ever heard them. They're incredible.
Nick said he likes episodes about baptism and the Holy Spirit. That's far back.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
had some really good.
Dude's been listening for a while.
Mental health, spiritual ones. So that's good. Yeah.
That's awesome.
We're growing on those. Brother Jose was really clutch recently in the one about internal family systems.
Yeah.
Which Father Boniface brought up yesterday, which is really cool.
Oh, yeah. He did. He did in passing. And we're like, oh, we covered that.
Yeah.
Vince says, would you rather wear a hair shirt or hair pants? Oh, gosh, dude.
That's
what a great question.
Well, is there anything allowed in like. You know what I mean? Like downstairs.
That's a great question.
Like,
can you?
Because if nothing,
can you protect yourself?
Yes, yes. Lauren, who's commenting, is the same one who's been on that podcast, so she is a celebrity.
She is a celeb, big celeb.
Full swing. If there's no barrier between the hair pants and your skin, then I'm wearing.
We'll take hair shirt all day.
100%. Like chafe nips all day. If like that's. What's like
the other thing is okay that was
cringe
way out of line no that wasn't cringe that was crazy there's the difference but okay the thing is sitting down would be so painful with hair or pants all the time like every time you sit and like move it all in your seat that'd be painful whereas I think a hair shirt although it would be still uncomfortable might have less moments of severe pain.
What's the largest what's animal question? You think you could best fight with your two hands, probably based off what Tom said, he thinks he could outrun a bear.
Well, he probably thinks he could fight a bear with his bare hands.
Biggest animal I think I could fight with two hands.
You got to be careful with these kind of answers because, like, animals are incredibly dangerous, like more so than we often give them credit for. So I think, what do you think?
A cat. No.
Well, it goes off size, not level of danger. So you could think of like a large, not very dangerous. Oh, that's true. The largest.
Yeah.
Like a bobcat might be more dangerous than a horse in some ways in regard to like if it just.
But if I'm fighting, so if we're fighting them, that means they're fighting back, right?
Oh, that's true.
If a horse fights me back, I'm done.
Oh yeah, if you get bucked by a horse, you are done.
Maybe a panda. I don't know how aggressive pandas are. I've never seen an aggressive panda. If you.
That's a good point. We never really, you never see him in action. Well, okay, maybe a sloth. No, actually.
Sloth actually can be really vicious.
They do have long claws, don't they? And the question wasn't the easiest animal to fight. The question is the biggest one that we think we could fight with if they really hands. Are being aggressive.
This is a stumper.
A hippo? Just kidding.
Dude,
you know, hippos kill more people than any other animal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, than any other animal.
More people than lions. But at the same time, I've heard they have bad eyesight. So maybe you could use that against him.
Huh.
Like, are we unarmed? Oh, did she say bare hands? Yeah. With your bare hands? Okay. No, I can't kill a hippo with my bare hands. I really want to think about this for a second.
Actually, maybe a crocodile. That sounds really crazy. But actually, I don't know do you know which one it is, that alligator crocodile that only has force by chomping down? I think it's an alligator.
Yeah.
So crocodiles have force by chomping up and down, but alligators are only down. So that means in order to bite, they have to open the top of their mouth. So if you can hold it tight, they actually like can't really do much. And if you ride on like the back of their heads, but I don't.
Have you heard of their death roll?
Yeah.
Where they bite in your arm and then they spin really fast and it literally just pulls your arm out of your body. And then you can't swim because you only have one arm.
So fight. Now, the operative word, she doesn't say beat. She just, you could beat in a fight. Never your mind. Says that. So I don't know if I could beat an alligator. I don't know. I might just put this one on pause because I don't know if I can answer.
We're going to discuss this at our next episode. Yes.
Okay.
We need some time to think about this.
Vince also likes the one on Lexi Davina and Confession. I really like the Confession episode, actually. I really enjoyed that one. And the one about you proving God's existence, about evil proving God's existence. Was underrated.
Underrated then. By you, maybe.
What?
No, just kidding.
Why? No, not by me.
No, I'm just kidding.
I never underrate you.
Oh, appreciate that.
Least favorite food meal in the monastery refectory. Probably, so Wednesdays are also meatless for us, not just Fridays. And our Friday meatless are like done better because it's like been in our program for a long time. But Wednesday meatless was only adopted maybe like 6 years ago. So it's like not new. Our Wednesday dinner is like block of dry fish, and I don't even, tahi maybe is what it is, mahi, that's what it is. It's awful. It's actually awful. I eat it. Barbecue sauce saves the day, man. Like people look at me weird, like, you're putting barbecue sauce and hot sauce on fish. But 100% it makes it worth it. But yeah, that's probably my least favorite.
You said you'd Wednesday meatless.
Yeah.
You said, okay. Yeah.
They also sometimes make like
Silhouette does the same.
Tuna. Nice. Like melted tuna thing. Like
tuna
like,
melts. Like
tuna melts. Yeah, with a English muffin, tuna and cheese.
Tuna melts gonna be good.
They've been sitting on like the line for like 40 minutes by the time we get there, so they're just like kind of yuck. So that's probably my least favorite. Favorite though, we have something called.
Oh, thanks, Jace. Jace loves us.
Oh, thanks, dude.
We love you too.
You're awesome. Like appreciate your fans.
The Christian charity sense, because we never met you personally, but like. We love you. Yeah.
Favorite though is our something called honey stung chicken, which is like this
honey
like,
stung.
Yeah, it's like breaded sweet chicken. It's honestly super good.
The bees still in it with their stingers. And
yeah, all the stingers are still in it. So
that's
you get
crazy.
Venom.
Sounds painful.
So you like basically turn into a superhero.
Caden says, if you could be a mythical creature, what would you be? That's a great question.
Oh, I've answered this question before actually. A griffin.
I was gonna say griffin. Now I gotta think of something else.
Yes, I beat him to it. So griffins are like these half eagle, half lion things. They have the wings and the head of an eagle, but the body of a lion. They're so, so freaking cool. Vince, I had an idea for a short film called Honey, I Stung the Chicken.
That's crazy. You're insane. Where do you come up with this stuff, Vince?
Okay. Yeah, Griffin, especially. Oh, if you've seen the Chronicles of Narnia, the scenes with the Griffins in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, just so, so freaking based. That's what I would be.
I'm trying to think. I think a dragon would be awesome. There's a couple that are in my mind. A dragon, a unicorn, but like the unicorn from the last battle in the Chronicles of Narnia, because he's hardcore. Like, we always imagine unicorns being these cute little rainbow colored guys that are friendly, but like the unicorn in the last battle kills people, right? Like he runs people through with his horn, which that's awesome. So him or a Pegasus or a dragon.
Pegasus is pretty sweet too.
There's something awesome about having wings and being able to fly. That'd just be incredible. So.
Okay, so nerd moment here for a second. I saw this graphic.
Or a centaur, dude. Oh. If you're a centaur, it would feel so good just running with the wind in your face, but having a human face. Because I'm thinking, like, how could you appreciate? Because Pegasus and unicorns, they're not rational, but a centaur is. So you could really think about how good it feels to be running really fast.
Well, in Chronicles of Narnia, the griffins do talk.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got the best of both.
And, the unicorn in Chronicles of Narnia talks.
Does he?
Yeah. He has a friendship with the king.
That's cool. Okay.
So,
but what were you going to say a minute ago? Sorry.
Really niche thing I was reading recently. So probably like one of the most famous mythical dragons is Smaug from The Hobbit. And I was seeing this graphic though, that Smaug is like a tiny dragon compared to the worst dragon from the First Age. That is like 1,000 times bigger than he is.
Oh yeah.
Like Smaug is like 300 feet long or something.
Inflation is crazy.
This thing is like 3,000 feet long.
I know. Thanks, Biden.
You're insane.
Sorry.
Okay.
Wait, you said 3,000 feet?
Yeah.
That's insane.
When during the day do you prefer to do the bulk of your prayer time? For me, my holy hour, I usually do leading up to Vespers, so 4 to 5. And then Vespers kind of, it's like a nice, like the extension of prayer. So I go from like personal prayer to community prayer. That's when I do like the bulk of mine. I also do Lectio Divina sometimes in that time, but also sometimes separately. But most of mine is like, I prefer like evening prayer because I'm so groggy in the morning that like, it's just not great. The problem is I also sometimes fall asleep because I'm so tired by the evening. So I'm really working on trying to balance like my priority of when the bulk should be. But right now it's in the evening.
We were doing mass together yesterday and during the homily, it just seemed like,
I did wake back up though.
You just fall asleep. You wake up because you nodded so strongly that it like gave you whiplash. But okay, Sean says 10-second dance-off battle, go.
Yikes. I gotta get some music if we're gonna do that. Can monks smoke? There are a few monks who smoke. Yeah, it's based, like, we get a very, very small stipend.
Based.
It's not based. We get a small stipend, and then if you want
a small
to smoke,
stipend for smoking.
No, not for smoking, just like in general. And if you want to smoke, you have to use that as, you know, your...
That's
You're
good
funding.
That they're not going to fund you with.
Wildly, though, there used to be a time in which there was a closet in the monastery with just packs for people. So we've really transitioned from
cigarettes?
That point. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I think I could visualize very classy old monks
piping.
Smoking.
Oh, yeah. No, I do that sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kick back with bourbon and whiskey or something and a pipe. Yeah.
Kentucky monk.
Okay. So
anyway, Sean, real quick, to your request, I want to honor that, but I'm just going to tell you I would win really fast anyway.
He would probably. Although people have invited me to weddings because of how good I dance.
Yes. Well, you dance crazy, which is cool. And
it's entertaining.
It keeps up the energy for a long period of time. But
skill wise.
But in 10 seconds, I would have the moves.
That's true.
That's the problem. But I mean, he is a very energetic dancer. He tore his pants completely when we were at our brother's wedding.
I did.
And when I say tore, I mean like from his butt down to his
like
calf, mid calf. Yeah. It was just completely torn open, showing everybody but himself.
We should do a carpool karaoke episode. I actually have low-key thought about that.
That's a great idea.
Thanks,
Sean.
Especially maybe get all the siblings together in a car.
Oh yeah,
that would actually be really fun. And when we were in Alaska, actually, we did something called car dancing. So I was the driver, and Nate was in it. Vince was in that car actually.
Our brother Tom's pretty good at car dancing too.
And there's like these other students from St. Vincent who are all there, and we blast the music and. There's dancing, car dancing as in dancing in the car, and there's car dancing when you dance with the car. And that's what I was doing. Like, you know, it was,
In the words of Shakira, the car's hips did not lie.
It's hard to, it's really hard to describe until you experience it.
Yes.
But no one wanted to leave that car. Like,
Really are few better feelings than some of those feelings that we had in that trip where we were listening to ABBA, like Dancing Queen. Unbuckled our seatbelts, and we're just like swerving the car, slamming my head against the window. I hit my head really hard, but it was really fun. So
yeah,
dancing in a car. If you haven't tried it, actually, I was gonna say you should, but I don't think we're supposed to recommend reckless driving. So
if you think about it, we didn't give you the idea.
Yes, we were also doing it in a pretty safe environment because there was so little traffic.
There were no
drivers on the roads.
Alaska. Yeah.
Yeah. People in Alaska just smoke.
They're
not driving.
That's
so.
That's facts. Okay, well, let's look like we're caught up on the questions there.
And we got 5 minutes left to the hour. I think we'll
yeah, we were thinking about
we'll,
an hour
we'll
for this one.
We'll wrap this up in about a couple minutes. But if anyone has any last questions or comments.
Questions or...
Or things that they want to request us talking about in the future.
Yeah, yeah. What are topics you want to hear from us? Because we like put that out there, but most of the time people don't really give us suggestions for conversations.
So. Yeah.
Especially something we're trying to move towards is like, I got you, Tom, in a second. The approach of whatever we talk about, with like our perspectives in mind. So. Yeah. Especially when Tom's on more often, because we're hoping to have him on again more often. When we said that, and then it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Now he's got a kid now, so we'll see. But
he already had one, but now he's got round three.
Yeah.
Exactly. I just heard the other day the difference between having two kids and three kids is the same as the difference between zero kids and one kid. Like it's an abrupt change.
Well, yeah, because they're outnumbered.
Yeah. Yeah. You went from doing man defense to zone.
Yeah. It's that's crazy. Actually great.
Yeah. So I heard someone describe it.
But that we like really want to tackle like questions or perspectives on things, whatever, from like position of like one who is married for Tom, one who is single and lay in the church, and then one who is in monastic vocation. Yeah. So we're not going to tackle everything that way, but kind of move towards that.
Yeah. What's it like to think as a celibate for Tom? What's it like to? I'm just kidding.
Okay.
I like driving on the celibate all the time.
All of the freaking.
I'm trying to remind you.
I had to edit out of the last episode because he like said it again, but it was like it was really weird the way he said it.
It was hilarious.
So Tom says, "What's the best future card game?"
Okay, oh, that's
this
a great
is a
question.
Shameless plug for
a bit of a leading question.
Yeah, so All Good in the Brotherhood is working on like producing more
stuff,
more content,
just a variety of things,
video content. So we are actively working on writing a book right now. But something else that we also working on is like kind of having like more like just like general home and family like entertainment mm-hmm. and things. So Nate and I have written a children's book. And that was for our niece and nephew, but I think actually we might put it out for more people mm-hmm. and eventually like write more of them, like a series.
Yeah, right.
But what we're alluding to now is we actually designed a card game and its first batch is out for print.
Tom came up with it. Tom produced it.
And our sister-in-law,
The
Pitch. If you were interested in what it looks like, we actually did a really, really preliminary crash course version of it before it kind of went into production,
right?
Over Christmas last year. So that also is only on Spotify. So look up the episode Elephants Doing What.
Good for you for remembering what that was called.
And yeah, thank you.
It's a crazy episode.
It's wild. It's we also recorded it at like 1 a.m.
We were really tired. We were like tired, tipsy.
Yeah, it was. But how does the card game compare to Monopoly Deal? A lot more fun and a lot more entertaining. So the
Monopoly Deal is fun.
It is.
It's a bold statement.
But this is a lot more fun.
Is there an update on the website?
The website's kind of in a freeze hold right now because we want to just have more content on the website before we publish it. So we want to have like options for like merchandise, which we're working on.
And links to a variety of different kinds of videos and stuff.
Nate's going to work on like some of his own content. Tom's working on some of his own content. So once all those things are up, then we'll publish a website. But the card game basically, like in a gist, is... kind of like apples to apples. You have one judge and then everyone else is, you know, kind of playing their hand. You draw, there's two decks. There's one deck is like a business or like an organization. And the other deck are like three adjectives or nouns. And you pull.
So as far as business organization, it's like the one deck could be insurance company, modeling agency, restaurant, bar.
Gym.
Yeah.
Private gym, golf course.
Exactly. Like that. And the specifications could be like cowboy themed.
Yeah.
All American.
Celery.
Celery. Outer space.
And so you pull one business and three adjectives.
Yeah.
And you have to give a pitch for a business model that includes all of those things. And you have a minute to give the pitch to the judge.
Exactly.
And the judge who says, he actually really wants to dance off today. I don't see about that. But... And the judge determines who wins the pitch for that round. And you play like several rounds until someone wins like five pitches. It's actually so funny.
Yes.
We all played it together and we were dying.
Exactly. It's one of those games that it's not about winning. It's more about like having a really funny time.
Yeah.
Great for a party. It'd be great for a party.
So we just ordered our first round of them. I think we just ordered like 100 decks to start. Mm-hmm. So if you think you're interested in that, like, you know, either send us directly an email or you can just like pop a message down here.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how we're going to be selling them. We might actually start a Patreon soon mm-hmm. so that we can have an option for like UW.
Or locals.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like just, you know, if you can find us, track us down. We'll give it, we'll pass it off. Yeah. We are going to probably charge something just to like, you know, make back a little bit of the money.
Our email on it, also, like starting off before we have like a website set up that you can contact us in a more general way. Our email is always posted in the description for our videos. So if you go to the video and you just click below the video, our email will be there. So you could email us even individually. And we could get back to you through that. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, okay. So, well, yes, can monks and priests have a business side hustle? So, no, not priests actually can. Priests can own their own property. But monks, not necessarily. So this is, if there's a business, it's under his name or under Tom's name. It's not under me. And I'm not making any money. Any money that might come that we split, the revenue goes to the monastery. Mm-hmm. And this is approved. The podcast is approved. All the stuff we're moving through with the business is approved by the abbot. So I'm not just trying to do my own side thing. It's approved by the monastery for the hope that it'll actually support our community financially. You know,
and as, through vocations.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not.
We had guys come to the monastery because they found our content. So.
Right. So it's not like you're able to. Not only do you not want to, but even if you did want to, you're not able to just make money from this and pocket it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
You're
exactly.
No longer
that's,
really.
That's actually breaking the vow of obedience right. to you're like no pocket my own money. So, Emma. Hello, Emma. Welcome. She asks, how do you choose a good spiritual director? How do you find the right personality, right fit for you?
That's a great question.
That's a really good question.
It's not just any priest will work. It might be one who's objectively a good priest, but he's just not the right fit for you.
Yeah. So especially one who maybe you don't have a lot of opportunity for like a variety of priests. We're really blessed at St. Vincent to have lots and lots of priests available. So if you're more like in a, just like a parish setting and you don't think maybe your pastor is maybe the right fit for you, there's actually, you can call, so if you're in like a diocese, call your chancery or like call the directory of the diocese and ask who are ones like in the diocese who are suited or trained for spiritual direction. Now, there are some who will do spiritual direction, like even if, and they don't necessarily notify the diocese that they're open to doing it, but they'll have a really good like count. If you have an order close to you, like monks or oratorians, Dominicans, contact them and ask like, who are the priests or the monks in your community, friars who are suited towards spiritual direction. And then
well, that's if you want to do it in person, potentially though, maybe in some ways it's not as good. Potentially you could even do some that are long distance.
Yeah. There are long distance spiritual director. The big thing is first you need to ask yourself, like, what do you desire to seek in spiritual direction? Because okay. Lauren gave a really good comment, that spiritual direction is, a director is a teammate, not a coach. So yeah, there, if you're like looking for just like a bunch of solutions to a bunch of things, that's not necessarily what a spiritual director is there for. Therefore, especially if we understand like the spiritual journey, like the three, like the purgative, illuminative, and unitive way, that a spiritual director is after we go on the purgative way. So we've striven to know Christ more. We're striving to let go of our sins. And we get to a point where like, I just need like something else to go deeper, like really striving to go deeper. That's the time to take a spiritual director.
Yeah.
Not necessarily when your life is chaos. If your life is chaos, you should probably go to therapy more than necessarily just running to a spiritual direction as an option. But if you are looking like, I want a deeper spiritual life, I want to be praying more consistently, more fervently. I want to know how to deepen devotion, how to understand the faith maybe better and incorporate in my life. That's a place for spiritual direction. I would then outline what exactly you're looking for. And then when you get in contact with someone who could answer those particular needs, whether it's, so you're calling the diocese, calling the head of the order and say like, this is what I'm looking for. They can probably begin to direct you somewhere.
Yeah.
If you are close to St. Vincent or you want to be connected with the monk, you can send me an email. Cause I do know a lot of the monks here who do spiritual direction, even over the phone. And based on what you might be looking for, I might be able to connect you with a suited spiritual director.
One thing though, that seems important is, like you said, you don't want to just approach it as a solution. Like, I'm just going to go to this guy so he can help me fix all my problems.
Yeah.
Cause they're not necessarily going to be able to do that, but it is really good when you're approaching spiritual direction to have for yourself awareness, first of all, the ways in which you know you need to grow, mm-hmm. and almost somewhat of a plan for, okay, here's what I'm hoping to get out of the spiritual direction.
Yeah.
Because exactly. You can't just go to a priest and say, direct me. And I'm like, okay, great. I don't know where you're at. I don't know what sins you struggle with. I don't know what point in vocational discernment you're at. You should kind of come prepared and say, here's where I'm at. Here's what I'm dealing with. Here's what I want to get out of this.
Where so I want to be.
Then they can direct you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then just one last thing. I just want to acknowledge Sean said y'all should have a dedicated episode about spiritual direction. Yeah, absolutely right.
I would actually really, I kind of want to have my spiritual director on.
Father Tom spiritual Ackland. Director directs a ton of people.
Between him and Father Boniface, like the whole Eastern Seaboard is like directed.
He literally wrote the book. The two of them wrote the book on spiritual direction.
Yeah.
If you look up books on spiritual direction, you will find one main one. What's it called? Sorry, I put you on the spot.
I think it might just be called.
It might just be called Spiritual Direction.
Stuff. Yeah.
But it's written by Father Boniface Hicks and Father Tom Ackland.
Yeah, they are fire. Those books are awesome. I've wanted to have Father Tom on for a while. He's just like so busy because all he does is spiritual direction. I think I'm going to ask him like eventually. I've wanted to, but I think that would be really good to help people understand like how to get like to a spiritual director. What should they expect? Thank you, Vince. It's called, Guide for Sharing the Father's Love, spiritual direction. So, look for that eventually. I don't know like when exactly that episode will drop, but
it's a great idea. We thought about it.
It's going to be in the works for sure.
Yeah.
And, hopefully also in the works, is an interview with, Professor Dr. Paul Kengor, who's renowned for his work in like Reagan historiography,
just history of
political 20th century history. Communism too, the downfall of communism. But he recently wrote a book, more a spiritual book on stigmatists, which came out, I think, just about a month ago.
Yeah.
And we have him hopefully on the docket soon in January to interview him about that. So he goes around the world speaking. The movie came out about Ronald Reagan recently over the summer. It was based on his book, The Crusader. So, yeah, just some cool things coming up. Yeah. And someone suggested a video on like day in the life of us individually. So like what's Tom's day in the life look like as a husband in his place, Nate's in his work, me specifically. I gave a general day in the life of a monk, but maybe day in the life of Brother Francisco. I think it'd be cool to do that and then like blend them together and then like reflect on like one question at the end. That's the same question.
That's a great idea. This will be our last question.
Okay. If you've done an episode on theology of the body, but not the overly pious and out of date take on it. We haven't actually, but, I wanted to bring on Father Cashin, who is a monk here. I wanted to have him come on about liturgy, but he actually is also certified in theology of the body. So that might be a question that we could discuss. Yeah.
The one thing I'd push back on though is saying that when it comes to the theology of the body, that you can't have an overly pious one. You can have ones that pretend to be pious and they're more falling on the side of being Puritan. But the true Catholic theology of the body is pious and deeply beautiful because of it. And so the teaching of the church on sexuality over its whole history has never been out of touch with reality. It is reality. Fair enough. Yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, we should do it at some point.
All right, appreciate your suggestions. And if you come up with more, feel free to send us an email. The email is in the description of all our videos. We'll be put one when this video becomes like more published, just as a general video on YouTube. We'll put it there too. But it's allgandbrohood@gmail.com. The replies will come back from Nate, because now officially under YouTube, since we are making money on our videos, all it's under his name.
Yeah.
So if you wonder why it doesn't come back from me, like my name, that's why, but I will respond too. If you have questions on like spiritual things that you just like want personally answered and you don't want everyone to know, also you can ask me that. God bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Also look out. I'll be on a guest actually on another podcast. I think it's called like the Daily Franciscan or something like that. We're going to do an episode with this Franciscan guy about like how monasticism and Franciscan spirituality are similar and different. So yeah. I'll put a link to that when that comes out in December. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you all. Have a wonderful day. So God bless. Thank you for joining. Adios.
Peace. God bless.